Hi, and welcome to The Right Side. I'm Andrea Ruth, and I'm here with my fellow co-host, Kimberly Ross. How are you?
I'm fantastic on the sweltering summer day, Andrea. How are you?
I'm good. And yes, we are finally getting into the sweltering heat, the short-lived, lived, is it lived or lived? I think it can be either. But heat that we actually get up into the high 80s and 90s for a solid like week and a half in the Pacific Northwest. And this is the first day of that. So yeah, we have, you know, and of course there's no air conditioning in you know, anything built before like 2005 doesn't have air conditioning in the house. So
meanwhile, I turned the AC on, I'm not kidding, in April and we have been under an oppressive heat ever since, and it will last through October.
Yes, yes. And and of course, you know, we follow many Texans and they're all whining about
yes.
the massive heat wave in Texas. Yes. I'm so yes. glad I was there last week and not this week.
And not now.
Yes. So we will, it's just you and me today, which is kind of like we haven't done one of these in a while.
Right.
And especially, yes. and then we haven't done one as a non, you know, kind of, so not, I mean, we're still both writers for Red State, but like not being the old pod format of the podcast. So, we both picked out just a couple things that like stories that kind of like piqued our interest this week. And of course they're going to be, you know, our curmudgeonly side coming out mostly, but we do have some fun stuff planned, don't we, Kim?
We do. We always do.
So why don't you go ahead and start with your first article that piqued your interest this week?
Yes, the first thing I chose was something by Reliable Sources host, which is a show on CNN, of course, Brian Stelter. He tweeted something, was it 2 days ago, it looks like, and there was an upcoming documentary, I believe it aired today. It was a little documentary on CNN, and he tweeted this clip of the documentary, and it's a two-minute clip, and it's about, drumroll, The Handmaid's Tale, and how it relates to the Trump era and the Trump presidency and all that stuff. And the clip, you have to see it. I mean, if you go to his Twitter page, you can see it on there. Or I'll include it in the article that I post, actually. But it's the little clip is him talking to one of the creators of the show and a TV critic. And they're sitting in like a darkened room. And they're talking about how important it is for this show to be airing right now and what it means for society and how now more than ever we live in a time that could turn into The Handmaid's Tale, which, if you're not familiar with The Handmaid's Tale, it's a novel set in a dystopian future, a future America that's actually called Gilead, and all these women that wear these red capes and white bonnets, they're subjected to the patriarchy, and a lot of them have to bear children for the rich people in society. So it's very much about, quote, reproductive rights and women who use this as kind of, you know, saying that the Trump era, we're living in The Handmaid's Tale during the Trump era. They are using that because of their support for abortion. And they're saying essentially that we're going to turn into Gilead and The Handmaid's Tale because of Trump and how much he hates women and reproductive rights. It's a bunch of nonsense. But this little clip, the thing that got to me was when Stelter is talking to one of the creators of the show. His name is Bruce Miller, and he says, quote, I would be very happy if my show became irrelevant as quickly as possible. Now, that is a complete lie. You know he loves the exposure that he's getting, even if it's based in lies, essentially. Presidency. He wants more people to watch a show. He enjoys going on these little documentaries that CNN does, talking about the necessity of a show, which is just purely entertainment with no connection to reality. It's not true at all that he wishes his show would go away. He wants it to continue. So anything that happens that's kind of extreme during the Trump presidency, if Trump says something like that or someone in his administration does, you know the show creator is like, yes, more people will watch the show and believe it mirrors present times. So I actually tweeted to Brian Stelter and I said that he's obsessed with the whole thing. And then he didn't really like that accusation, but it's true because there's been so many women that dress up in these red cloaks, and bonnets and act as if women are being stripped of their reproductive rights. It's totally false. And then the show creator saying that he doesn't want his show to end. Yeah, right. But you enjoy making the money. So that was my first little thing this week.
Yeah, you know, he also didn't much like a tweet of mine where I can't remember what he tweeted, but oh, he was like, he tweeted something like, "It's happening. The at the White House press briefing, Sarah Sanders tried to move along to another reporter, but this reporter ceded her time to so that this other reporter could ask a follow-up question." And I was just like, this is so it's I used the word gauche for the first time in like years, and I was like, this is so galling that it, that the that they're like getting it's like the press secretary is supposed to call. I mean, what is it, are they supposed to have reporters just commandeer the press briefing? Yes, all presidents and people at press briefings and White House press secretaries move along quickly from people they don't really want to have answers to. You know, that's how it, I mean, is it the best thing for our republic? Probably not. But at the same time, does the, you know, with the ongoing media war between the Trump administration and the media, does the media really think that the Trump administration thinks that the media is going to be fair in their questions? And so this whole idea that, oh, it's happening, you know, the little glee, like you could almost hear Brian Stelter giddily clapping his, you know, soft, you know, paper white hands that he just, you know, anyways. So I said something like it had been over 2 weeks since the White House had held an on-air press briefing, and I was like, this kind of thing almost makes me like hope that they say, fine, we're gonna wait even longer to have another one. If you guys are just gonna make this into a show for yourself, that's why I'm perfectly fine. I would be perfectly fine with the press briefings being completely off air like they did last year for a while, and because all it turns into is people like Jim Acosta, you know, and Erin Ryan. Is that not, yeah, is that her name? April
April
Ryan.
Ryan.
Yeah, there is an Erin Ryan, but yeah, April Ryan, you know, just mugging for the camera and trying to make a show for themselves. And you know, it all, it's kind of like it's reminiscent of Katie Couric yelling at, you know, a question at George W. Bush. Or no, she didn't yell at him. She got an impromptu meet. She just ran into him and got an impromptu interview and asked him, I can't even remember what the question was, but it made him mad. And anyway, I'm very like bad at my early 90s George H.W. Bush presidency history, clearly. But anyway,
No,
so yeah, so Brian
I feel the
Stelter.
same way when it comes to the press briefings. I am I supposed to choose a side? I mean, I think the whole thing is just a show, and I do not care if they're on air or not. I would prefer that they're off air and people can, you know, do all that stuff in private. I don't really care to see it. It's just so ridiculous. She's going to always defend the administration she works for, and they're always going to try to be the best representative from their, you know, network, and everyone freaks out when either side doesn't do what they want. I'm like, are you're expecting something different? You're not going to get it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, I keep on seeing people, and they're probably right, like media people that are kind of like Trump friendly, or at least like not neither here nor there on the president. But like they keep saying, you know, Trump's not going to have to run against the Democrat. He's going to run against the media, and the media is less liked than Donald Trump. So it'll be interesting. And that's what Brian Stelter cannot figure out.
No.
So which is why Glenn Beck walked off, you know, had his big thing and walked off, because Brian Stelter is not interested in finding out anything.
No.
It's really
But
incredible.
reliable sources, Andrea.
Yes.
Reliable sources.
You know, someone pointed out to me that Howard Kurtz, who was the host of Reliable Sources before Brian Stelter for 15 years, and Brian Stelter is now obsessed with Fox News. And where did Howard Kurtz go? He now does Media Buzz on the weekends on Fox News. So it was just a fun little bit of trivia somebody
That
pointed
is
out to
funny.
me. Yeah. So, but yes, I agree. This whole Handmaid's Tale thing is, you know, I actually watched this, you know, they have a show on Hulu about the book, and the show is actually good, but they're not tying it to the Trump administration. It's good as a standalone, you know, dystopian. I mean, dystopia is supposed to be, you know, 1984. Yes, are there like certain like, you know, prognostications that people, you know, that like Orson Welles and things like that are trying to, you know, warn against and things like that. Yeah, all I mean, so is Silent Spring and the whole environmental movement, you know, but acting like these hair on fire dystopian scenarios are just around the corner is very, yeah, it's bad. It's acting in bad faith, really, and presenting your argument in a way that isn't responsible, I don't think.
No, not at all.
So, well, you want to move on?
Oh, sure, yes.
Okay. So
And your
my
first one?
Mine is there is this woman from New Jersey who has never been to Alaska. I've never been to Alaska either, but living in the Pacific Northwest, we have a ton of Alaskans that live down here part of the year, fishermen who work up in Alaska most of the year, but they're from here. You know, so I know a lot of Alaskans. She is running as a Democrat in Alaska and has never been there and doesn't plan on going there during the campaign. And she has said, she told the AP, her name is Carol Hafner. She's like I said, she's from New Jersey. She's a Democrat running in for the US House seat. And she says to the AP, "Don't lock me out just because I'm not a homeboy. You ought to be thankful that I care enough and I'm interested enough and passionate enough to want to make things better." Okay, this is like one of those things where people from outside of Texas rail against Ted Cruz and are like, how can we've got to get Ted Cruz out of the Senate? I mean, there's tons of outside money flooding in to support Beto O'Rourke and stuff like that in Texas. This is the same kind of, you know, Democrat progressive audacious, like I said before, galling again. It's just that you would go up and try and run, not try and run, actually run up in a state that has a lot of, like state identity kind of thing. And there's, you know, the Northeast is kind of, you know, I mean, I've been there a few times, but it's the Northeast is kind of all, yes, there's like New York pride, New Jersey pride. A lot of, you know, New Yorkers get upset because they're like, oh, that person's not a New Yorker, they're from New Jersey, or that person's not from New Jersey, they're from New York. That was always a thing with, you know, the Jersey Shore people. Oh, they're not from New Jersey, they're from New York. There's a lot of state pride there. So I don't understand why this woman thinks that doubling down on not only running up there, but doubling down on the condescension and saying, like, you ought to be thankful. It is unreal, and I hope that she's ridden out of that off that ballot on a rail. And oh, it is just, can you imagine? Could you imagine even someone like coming to Mississippi from a and never having been to Mississippi trying to run? I mean, this is beyond the, you know, oh, I'm gonna run in the district I grew up in, but I don't live there right now because I'm my girlfriend, you know, her apartment who I live with is in a, that's what happened in Georgia, right? The Georgia 6 election. I mean, he grew up in that in the district. He lived in the neighboring district, but wasn't a resident of the, people made a big deal about that. This is someone coming in who's never even been to the state. I mean, yeah, Pat Robertson barely, I mean, his address in Kansas is like the back part of a furniture store or something like that. Like he never lives, he doesn't live in Kansas anymore either. But at least he's been there. I'm just like stunned beyond belief. Like this is the days that we are living in where these where people can have the audacity to go and be this condescending. It's like, and you wonder, again, it's the unself-awareness coming from the left. And I'm sure that there's examples of that on the right. I just can't point any out right now.
Yeah, I don't. This woman is crazy. And I don't know why she thinks she should run or has any sort of chance at getting even a little bit of the sliver of the vote total. But as we're talking, you know, Alaska is not part of obviously the contiguous United States, and it's completely different than running in for another seat in a state that is part of the contiguous United States. I mean, that would still be crazy, but she's trying to run in Alaska. And I don't know if she thinks because Trump is a president that she can kind of like ride the blue wave that she believes is coming. I'm not sure. But what really struck me as interesting, her whole campaign, obviously she hasn't visited Alaska and she's not going there. Her whole campaign is going to be on social media. Now that is fine. I mean, that's fantastic. But I went to her Facebook page and she has 7 likes on her Facebook page. And I thought that was pretty special. I have more likes than that on my writing page. And I'm not running for any seat in the government. I mean, and I still don't have many likes on my Facebook page. But she has 7 likes on her Facebook page. And when you go to her Twitter page, because she's doing everything on social media, she kind of reminds me of an elderly, an older Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because she's very extreme, very progressive, and she has kind of this look to her. But in her little bio, here's some things she wants for the state and the country in general. She wants Medicare for all. She's very focused on women's rights, LGBT rights. She wants to abolish ICE, legalize cannabis. She wants no ANWR drilling, and she wants free college for all. And this woman who doesn't live in Alaska thinks she can just type these in on some social media page and get any sort of following. It is so humorous to me. And I guess it kind of is part of the Trump derangement syndrome. She thinks she can attach herself to this change that's supposedly coming. And even if it does come in midterms, she's not going to be successful, I don't believe, because she's trying to do it this way.
Yeah, and I believe I saw someone from Alaska tweeted a pretty long thread about it, and the Republican incumbent Don Young is like the longest serving congressman from Alaska, and like the eighth longest serving congressman. Not that, you know, it's like I'm all, you know, for people not making careers out of being in Congress, but at the same time, it's like the idea that you're going up there as a Democrat for people that have voted repeatedly for Republicans, right. Is just, and apparently so I'm looking at an article on this, from the Daily Wire that you, forwarded along. And it says that a New York man ran against Mark Begich in Alaska in 2014. So this has been tried before by these carpetbaggers. And an Arizona man ran against Representative Cynthia Loomis in Wyoming and also lost. So I don't know what this new thing is that people think that the U.S. Constitution says you have to be living in the state that you're elected to when you get elected. I don't know what would happen if that, there would be some kind of constitutional challenge. But yeah, at least these people keep getting soundly defeated. And I don't understand other than maybe, you know, they want our country to be more like Russia or other, like they actually think we're a democracy and everybody from America should just be able to run wherever. I don't know if that's the delusion. But yeah, it was, I really do think it's funny that people who have no real sense of, you know, federalism and state politics, that you just want to go and do something like this. It, like I said, it just seems delusional. But anyways, so we can move on to the next one. Kim, this was yours that I actually think I sent to you, but you got like way more eye rolls out of it than I did.
That is true. The next one that, like Andrea said, she sent to me is a piece that was at LifeSite News, and it was this past, I want to say, well, it doesn't really matter. It was just a few days ago. Yeah. But it was an article called on LifeSite News, which is primarily, I mean, it's a faith-based site, but it's primarily pro-life issues and all these things. The article is entitled The Gaying of Fox News, Gaying, G-A-Y-I-N-G. And the article is specifically discussing, Brett Baer. He recently congratulated Guy Benson, who is a town hall columnist and, you know, pretty well-known conservative commentator, Guy Benson, on his recent engagement to his now fiance, who is a man. And Brett Baer had tweeted, Guy, congratulations. It takes guts to ask in a wobbly boat. All the best. Thanks for sharing this moment. Love is cool. And there's other little clips in there. Let's see. There's Tammy Bruce. She is a contributor to Fox News. She has been married to a woman since 2013. No, that's Amy Walter. But Tammy Bruce is also a lesbian. Anyway, so it's talking about these panelists and guest commentators and people who are kind of on there pretty regularly, actually, on Fox News, and their sexual orientation. And the whole article is essentially saying that Fox News isn't, I guess, pro-family, and they're not fair. At the very end, it says, bottom line, don't expect truly, quote, fair and balanced, end quote, reporting on LGBT issues from Fox News. And it, you know, goes on and on and everything. And my problem with this, first of all, is that for a site that is primarily supposed to be about pro-life issues, by posting something like this, they're essentially saying that people in the LGBT community, no matter which political party they belong to, can't really be a part of the pro-life movement because we're disgusted by them and we don't believe in the choices they've made in their personal life. Even if it doesn't, you know, affect us, we kind of don't want them in our group because it's disgusting and gross. And that does a huge disservice to the pro-life cause because, as I've talked about before, just for example, at the pro-life conference I was at in June, there were Democrats for Life, LGBT for Life, secular pro-life, humanist for life, all these things. And I don't obviously agree with all of these people on all of these different issues, but we come together in a unity around the pro-life issue. And so I think kind of shutting these, you know, people out, if they're in the LGBT community, kind of shutting them out, even if you don't mention the pro-life cause in the article, your article is pushing them away. I mean, why would they be interested in coming to your site or, you know, sharing your articles about abortion or laws that are affecting the reproductive rights in the country? Why would they be interested in doing that if they see something like this on the screen? And when I tweeted about that and how it bothered me, someone said, well, this is mostly, I mean, this is a Catholic site and they're focused on family and traditional values and stuff. And they're really concerned with gay couples, lesbian couples adopting children. That's what this article is really about. But there's not a single thing in the article about adoption. There's nothing about taking care of kids. There's nothing about children. It is all about the sexual orientation of the people who appear on Fox News. And I have no problem with anyone and their sexual orientation and where they appear on any show and what they talk about. I don't, you know, have to agree with them on every issue to still, you know, think that they can get up there and, you know, share what they believe and everything. But it just really bothered me that LifeSite would do something like this. And I think it put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth who have been following LifeSite for a while and use it as a resource for pro-life issues. And to see something like this, it just really turns people away.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, you know, how the Democratic Party has really shut out a lot. Like you mentioned that there were, you know, Democrats for Life at the convention that you went to, but many in the Democratic leadership have said, I mean, the Democrats tried to be a, you know, open to both pro-life and pro-abortion, you know, people back in the 90s, and it didn't work for them. And so, you know, that the Democrats for Life, and I actually saw something on Twitter today that they had an event, I think this weekend, the Democrats for Life did.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's really encouraging, but they're a very small minority. And it's the same thing with like how when we had Chad Green on, that gays and lesbians tend to be fairly more, you know, there are actually quite a few of them that are conservative. And when you have mm-hmm. this thing that kind of, you know, comes out as, I mean, we don't have to go into like, you know, calling it hate speech, but when you go into being hateful, and that's how that whole thing came off, as being hateful, you know, like mm-hmm. my mom always, you know, growing up said, don't be hateful, you know, like it just, that's not the way to get people to, you know, come join you on in other things, you know.
Right. And I think for the LGBT community, especially, and I've said this about libertarians as well, who are, you know, they're focused on liberty, and I think they should be some of the most pro-life people out there, because everyone should have certain freedoms, and the most basic is the right to life. Same thing with the LGBT community. If they're talking about true equality, I mean, if that's what we're talking about, just true equality, not all these other entitlements or anything, if we're talking about true equality, that begins. The LGBT community is about that, they should be some of the most pro-life individuals out there. And I don't have to agree with them on a bunch of other issues to join with them on this issue. Mm-hmm. And if LifeSite wanted to focus on the faith-based disagreements that they have with that community, that's fine. But it was focusing on Fox News and essentially saying that I can't believe all these gay people are on Fox News. I mean, that's kind of odd. There's no, I don't think, religious or sexual orientation requirement for being on Fox News. I mean, I don't watch Fox News, but I don't think there is.
Yeah, no. It does seem that how your sexual orientation like affects your, you know, intelligence or thoughts and opinions on certain matters, I don't know. I mean, Guy Benson is a very talented journalist, mm-hmm. you know, so yeah.
Strange.
And like you said, Tammy Bruce is one of the most like vocal advocates for the pro-life cause out there. She used to be on, I think she used to run Planned Parenthood, or at least be on the board of it.
Just strange.
Anyways, so we have fun things to talk about now. So I came across this tweet and it went around Twitter and I just kind of wanted, I was like, oh, this is kind of an interesting thing to kind of maybe discuss on here. So the Lone Conservative, put out they're a college conservative group. They put out this little like questionnaire. It's a little, what do you call it? Not an image. I can't remember. Think of it anyway.
Meme.
It's memetic, but a meme, right? Right? Yeah. I remember taking a course in when I was in college in political science. It was something on memetics and talking about like how memes affect people and like when it comes to religion. Anyways, it was anyway. But I digress. This tweet says, which button do you press? And it goes through, it's got 8 different colored buttons. So I'll just go through them really quick. Red is for always have one GOP senator from your state. Blue is change conservative thought to your opinion on one issue. Yellow, have most popular conservative column for 30 years. Green, your congressional district stays red for at least 20 years. Orange, no scandals for conservatives for 10 years. Purple, be one of the top influential conservatives online. Gray, choose 3 federal agencies to abolish. Pink, weekly dinner with your favorite political thinker. So, Kim, I'll do mine second, but which one did you pick and why?
I'm actually tied between the blue, which is change conservative thought to your opinion on one issue, because, of course, my opinions are the best. Just kidding, everybody. And also gray. I was torn between that one and gray, which is choose 3 federal agencies to abolish. I think that would be fine. All the other ones are just kind of superfluous. I mean, they're no scandals for conservatives for 10 years. I mean, after those 10 years, you're going to have tons of scandals just because that's how people are. And the other one, like weekly dinner and stuff, I don't think that's as important. But I was tied between those two. Change conservative thought and choose 3 federal agencies to abolish. And I did see in the comments, most people that were commenting, there's like a ton of libertarians that commented. And they were all like, gray, 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 which made me laugh. I mean, I agree with them, but I thought it was pretty funny because they're not super pro-government.
Yeah. So
what was yours?
So I chose yellow, which is have most popular conservative column for 30 years. And I will tell you why. First of all, I like the money that would probably come along with that. But second of all, and my fiance said, picked pink, which is weekly dinner with your favorite political thinker.
Oh,
and
so I was like,
which one did you have your husband pick one?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
So I was like, I'll get to do this one, but then I also get to go to dinner with you. So I get to... So I picked that one because it takes care of blue, because if you have the most popular conservative column for 30 years, you're already changing conservative thought to your opinion on any issue, on issues, right? And with the whole, I thought about the gray thing, but the thing about the gray thing is that if you abolish three federal agencies, they'll just create three new ones. I mean, you know, that's just how it works. And so I was like, well, that's easily to, like, you know, flipped. Once you abolish three agencies, they'll just come up back and, but anyway, so that's why I decided to pick yellow, because I was like, well, the props would be nice. You'd probably still become one of the most influential conservatives online, because I mean, look at someone like, you know, Jonah Goldberg, who has a very popular column, you know, at right. National Review with the G-File. You know, he puts a lot of conservative, he's, and or you could even look at someone like who's passed away, like William F. Buckley. I mean, he changed conservative thought to, you know, had a lot of his opinions out there. And anyway, so that was mine. I was just kind of like, you know, and no scandals for conservatives for 10 years. It's like, that's boring. I got it. You got to have some scandals, you know?
Yeah, of course. And I don't know, Andrea, I was thinking of other people when I chose gray. I wasn't thinking about myself and yellow and pink like you and your fiance.
I know.
My so. Goodness.
It is a little self-serving.
No, but I mean, hey, that would be pretty good. Like you were talking about Jonah Goldberg, also like Charles Krauthammer, mm-hmm. And how influential he was. And he was there for several decades. But yeah, that's a tough one. But I think your answer was pretty good.
I think abolishing, you know, three. So which three agencies would you abolish then?
Well, I would for sure do the Department of Education.
Would you do the EPA or do you keep that one?
No, I think I'd get rid of the EPA. People are going to hate me for that one. Maybe Health and Human Services too.
Okay.
But there's a lot to. Oh, there's a lot to get rid of. But now, the first one would be Department of Education.
If I could have, you know, chosen three amendments to get rid of, I might have picked that one just because.
Oh my goodness!
I can't stand that senators are voted popularly. And so anyways, that one would just be a little bit too much for me to.
That would have been a better button instead of three federal agencies, three amendments, because I mean, you're really getting to the heart of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you would just go in there and just mark everything out. You popular, most popular conservative columnist.
Oh, gosh.
You are harsh.
I have. It's speaking of harsh. There's another meme that I saw that my sister shared, and it's the picture of, you know, the dinosaur on from Toy Story.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
it had a thing that said, and I shared this with on a Neil Dewing, who's, you know, very Catholic, had posted this thing about back when the whole Amy Coney Barrett thing was going on, and it was this meme, and I shared it with Neil from my sister, and it had at the top part of the meme, it's split in half. The first part is the picture of the dinosaur, the happy dinosaur from Toy Story, and it says like something like modern American Christianity, and then it says, and then underneath it shows the T-Rex from the first Jurassic Park, and it says biblical Christianity.
Oh.
It was just amusing to me. So anyway,
gosh.
Just because Neil is such like a his post was about how, you know, he'd heard all of this stuff about how Amy Coney Barrett was this diehard, you know, very strict Catholic, and then he found out that then he went and read about her, and she was some like new ecumenical site. I can't remember what he said, but he was not impressed. You know, she wasn't like basically like proper old school Roman Catholic mm-hmm. the way that Neil likes. So yeah, it was quite funny. if you want to see this meme, you can email me or hit me up on Twitter and I will share it with you because it's quite funny. So last but not least, you did something a week ago.
Gosh.
That has me all
A flutter?
No, outraged. Not a flutter.
Oh,
A flutter
I'm
is
not
nice.
shocked. Not shocked that you're outraged at this. Ugh.
Yes. So you had something that is, I am not a big fan. Look, I for everyone for anyone who's listening, I used to be a health food nut to the point of I was anorexic for 8 years. But that started out as me trying to get healthy and lose weight and stuff like that. That went into a full thing where I, at the end, would only eat about five different foods because, and they were all superfoods. And so that's how like nuts I, so I have gone completely the other way in the last like 6, 7 years where I believe that screw, if you're having something that is a sweet or a chocolate or something that's an indulgence, right? Chocolate, anything like that, just forget about the health food part of it and just get the best tasting one. And here
No.
you have on
No.
your Twitter account or somewhere, I can't even remember where. It was too, it blanked out in my brain.
You're in such a fog of rage, you can't even
I
remember
know.
it.
Chocolate
I
hummus.
think I put it, no, I talked about it on Twitter, yeah, because it's amazing. So if anyone is trying to guess what Andrea's freaking out about, it's this wonderful thing called chocolate hummus. I mean, that is what is causing so much anger from her. It's just chocolate hummus. And the brand I eat is Boar's Head, and it's dark chocolate dessert hummus. And it is so good, and it is so creamy, and it taste there's enough cocoa to make it very, very wonderful and chocolatey, but it's not overpowering. And then the sugar aspect, there's a little bit, but not tons. So you get the full chocolate and sugar flavor, but you're not sacrificing, tons of calories. And hummus is made from chickpeas. And there's a lot of good fats in there, so it's heart healthy and all this. And Andrea just completely rejects everything connected to this. And I love the dark chocolate hummus, and you can dip like fruit in there, or graham crackers, or pretzels, and I love it. And it satisfies a sweet tooth, and I know it's also, has this health aspect to it. But Andrea refuses to allow me to enjoy it.
I disagree that it's low calorie because hummus is like, I believe 70 calories per tablespoon, and the whole
Let's
thing is like
see.
700 calories.
Yeah.
Anyways,
See,
I
two nutrition facts for the Boar's Head dark chocolate hummus. 2 tablespoons is 80 calories, 4.5 grams of fat, but that includes monounsaturated fat and polyunsaturated fat at 2.5 and 1 gram. And those are the good fats. There's also no cholesterol. There's 95 milligrams of potassium, 3 grams of fiber, and pure happiness.
Oh. Well,
Andrea hates everything about this.
I stick with my opinion that if you really want to eat chocolate with your fruit, go and get a fondue pot and stick some actual go get some Ghirardelli chocolate to melt away in there and go to town. But fine, Kim. But you know what? At least I have a former Red State writer and now with the Blaze, Sarah Gonzalez. She joined me in believing that this is disgusting.
But
So,
do you like normal
of
hummus?
course, oh my gosh, I love it.
What, you love normal hummus, but you reject chocolate hummus? Ugh, that's so weird. That's weird.
I don't want to. I also have an issue with like the texture of hummus when you're eating chocolate, and the fact that it probably piles up and looks like a little poo, a little piece of
I mean,
poo.
it kind of looks like really thick icing with like a hint of like
Oh.
being like a little muddy, but it tastes great,
Like
Andrea.
the Duncan
I
Hines icing. I've eaten
just
way
act
too
like it's
many cans of
icing and
that.
it's not even close, but it's
Yeah.
good.
Yeah, that's what I used to always say that if you take a slice of tomato with and a slice of onion and put ketchup on it, it tastes just like a hamburger. Now, what do you th say to that, Kim?
I'm outraged at that.
Oh,
That
and
is
also a pickle.
horrifying.
Also a pickle slice.
Ugh, no. No.
Tastes just like a hamburger.
No, it doesn't. Oh my gosh. I'm glad your opinions on politics are great, because your opinion on hummus is dreadful.
Oh no, I've told that to many people about the whole hamburger thing, and every time I get this look like, are you insane? But
Maybe
it's a great diet food.
another show we can talk about how I love black bean burgers too.
Oh, those are actually nice because
The
they
spiced
season
black
they
bean
yeah
burger.
they season them nice. So I actually do
Yes.
like those. Yes.
Yeah, those are good.
Yeah. You
Yeah.
just don't try and sell it as, oh, it tastes just like a hamburger. Because only a slice of tomato, a slice of onion, and a pickle slice drizzled with French's mustard tastes actually like a hamburger.
Well, I mean, my husband does say, and I quote, "You really like that liberal vegan food, don't you?" End quote.
Yes.
I mean, I kind of do. I kind of have weird. I have, yeah, I like weird food, I think.
Well, so do I. I used to always say that I would eat anything. I would try anything once. And I used to work for a company that hauled primarily feed for like cattle feedlots and things like that. And I always said, as long as it was food grade, the drivers, I was like, if you bring it in here, I will take a bite of it. If it was food grade, as long as it was food grade, like they would bring in like grain screenings, which is kind of like the leftover after you take out all the wheat or oats or whatever that you actually put in food. They would take that and take the screenings, and then they would put it into like they would pelletize it and stick it in, but it was all food grade. So,
Right.
the guy or hay pellets and things like that. Like I would take a bite. It was kind of like a fun, I don't know, like I was in my 20s. Don't talk to me now because I probably wouldn't do it now. But back in my 20s, when I had issues with food, I actually did that.
That's extreme. And you think chocolate hummus is bad? Ugh.
Yeah. All righty. Well, Kim, we've killed 40 minutes. Hopefully people aren't totally you can leave us comments on how bad our food opinions are or how wonderful they are.
How wonderful they are. Yes.
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 Kim, where can ever have you had a good time? Has everything gone the way you hoped?
Yes, it really has.
Okay.
Yes, you can find me on the wonderful world of Twitter at Southern Keeks, KEEKS. You can find me at Red State, and you can also find me at Washington Examiner and your local grocer's aisle where the hummus is.
Yes, and you can find me at your local grocer's aisle where the actual chocolate is. And you can find me on Twitter at Andrea and Ruth and at Facebook at Andrea and no, Andrea Ruth Page and at redstate.com. If I ever write anything now that I'm back from vacation and get out of this vacation funk.
That's a hard slump, yeah.
Yes, it's bad. So, all right, enjoy the heat. Bye.
Bye.